everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this side of the glass, sitting here alone in the studio. On the other side of the glass in the control room is John Couch, my engineer, producer, and friend. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It is the midweek edition. It's Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. It's a good thing I give the date every day on the show, because a lot of people don't really, there's just like, what day is this? I mean, some of these days seem like they stretch into weeks and the months. Wow. It's a crazy time. We are practicing safe distancing while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We're on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening available for you on my website, buckmastershow.com, which piggybacks with kvoi.com. All of our podcasts available for you 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, if you'd like to join in the conversation, we hope you do, 790-2040. Well, higher education is facing its biggest challenge in at least 100 years in the United States from this black swan event known as COVID-19. The 22nd president of the University of Arizona, Dr. Robert Robbins, is with us now on the live line. Dr. Robbins, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are you today?
Doing well. I wish you were seated across from me like we normally do in our studio interviews. But, of course, all of our interviews now being done telephonically. We hope we can get back to somewhat of a normal situation real soon. And I think you're probably hoping that very same thing for the University of Arizona. Where are we right now in all of this, Dr. Robbins?
Well, Bill, I do wish I was there in your beautiful new renovated studio. The last time I was there, it was such a pleasure to be with you, as it is always. Well, you know, Bill, we've made the decision to go to an all-digital platform. So using Zoom and other modalities to teach and learn at the university, and the faculty, staff, and students have all done a great job to get us through the end of this semester. Then we'll continue that through the summer, and then we're planning on having our students come back for the fall term, late August, early September.
When will that decision be made, do you think, on the fall?
I think that we've made that. That's our decision to move forward with that, and we've got a lot of considerations, as you can imagine, and that's about 125 days away or so. So we've got a good couple of months to see how this is all going to play out. But we're anticipating, because of this novel testing program that we've developed in our basic science research labs, been done at the university. We sort of got on this early so that we could produce our own test kits and develop our own antibody tests. So we're going to test on a voluntary basis, all faculty, staff, and then we've got mitigation strategies. If we need to wear N95 masks, if we need to have this continued social distancing, we're going to work out all those details. But we want our students back on campus. I think it's an important part of what we do, and we're prepared to go all digital and remote learning and teaching if we need to, if there's a resurgence in the virus, but we think right now we're going to move forward with cautious optimism that we can bring everybody back together in the fall.
But again, a little bit of breaking news here. The decision has been made, Dr. Robbins. Right now, it is full speed ahead for face-to-face on campus in August.
Yeah, that's our intention. You know, we probably need to have a sort of go-no-go date because if as we listen to the experts and we look at the data, you know, probably by the end of June, we're targeting a date of about June 24th to say, okay, this is our last chance. If we're going to stop this, we need to stop it now, because once we you know, let families know that their students are going to be back in the fall. If we're going to pull the plug on that instead of doing it 3 days like we did during the middle of spring break. We want to give a buffer of about 2 months before classes would actually start. But yes, our intention is to move forward right now.
What is the situation financially? I understand the most credible shortfall projections show about $250 million. That's one quarter of $1 billion from this crisis. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, you know, we're going to see $66 million by the end of this fiscal year, and then those projections are for next year. And that's based on the fact that we can't get our international students into the country and back on campus, and an assumption that a certain percentage of our students from out of state just are not going to want to leave home. And they're going to probably give it a year to see how this all shakes out. So those are the two major assumptions in this. And so that number that you quoted, which is a big number, $250 million, is if we open and have students come back to campus. It would be a reduction in our international students and our out-of-state students by about 25%. That's what we're projecting. And that's how we based this furlough program that we introduced last Friday.
All right, let's talk then about what specifically is done about construction projects. Is pretty much everything been put on hold now, Dr. Robbins?
That's correct, Bill. And that's really disappointing because we've got a couple of brand new research buildings. Of course, the University of Arizona is one of the top research universities in the world, and bringing online new buildings are really important to us, especially around our strategic objectives around aerospace, health sciences, the environment. But we're just going to have to push pause on that. My hope is we delay them for about a year until we can get the financial situation figured out, and hopefully we're going to be more positive than these projections. But as I look around, you're starting to see we were sort of out in front of this. But if you look at the University of California system there, they said in the month of March, the average was about a $55 million loss per campus. They have 10 campuses, Berkeley, UCLA, Irvine, others. And so Johns Hopkins came out today. University of Wisconsin announced a big furlough layoff plan last week. So you're going to see this from every university because we run our universities based on tuition. And if students don't show up to enroll and pay tuition, then there's no revenue. Therefore, we don't have work to do.
The furlough program will save furlough and pay reductions projected to save $93 million. And, of course, that's a lot, but that is considering if you had to go to online, which you have decided at this point not to, but, of course, you did say you'd revisit it later. But that
sure.
would impact this dramatically, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If we have to go to an all virtual situation like we are now, that number is going to increase to probably $350 to $400 million. And remember, the mitigation, this furlough option is one that's very, very hard on everyone. And I realize that with unemployment levels now at the highest that, you know, I've seen. Obviously, in my lifetime, we have to go back to the 1930s to see unemployment rates this high. So we tried to preserve people's jobs here, but it only gets us to about 150 of that $250 million shortfall. So built into this plan, we had already decided to freeze hiring. So that's sort of a de facto layoff, because we're not replacing positions when people retire, when they move. And so we've got another $100 million to find for this model to work.
It's very interesting, this article in USA Today. Students are very weary of the online classes, but colleges say They do want to open, of course, face-to-face in the fall of 2020. And they point out, as you know, Dr. Robbins, the college experience for people involves friends, professors, sports, extracurriculum activities on campus. That is what is traditionally thought of as the college experience. And I think you would say that's an amen to that, right?
Amen, for sure. That's what we're here for. Obviously, though, we do a lot of remote learning and online teaching for those students who want that flexibility. And even with this plan to bring students back on campus, we're going to be in a hybrid mode because there are going to be students in places like Kentucky or something who don't want to leave home and want to stay closer to home. Even California, you know, we depend a lot on our California students to make the drive over to Tucson, and some of them are just simply going to stay closer to home. But yes, the on-campus experience, of course, is something that's very special. You get to be around others. There's the whole Greek life experience. There's the sporting activities and going to events and plays and things like that. My big concern, of course, is you and I have talked over the years now about our love for athletics. I'm really concerned about whether we're going to be playing football in the fall. And my sense is right now, I just don't see that happening.
All right. And I do want to pick up on that because that was the second part of our conversation today. But right now, Dr. Robbins, as you very well know, our local restaurants very much hurting. And one of our great supporters is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Folks, you can walk into Mona's Danish Bakery right now, and I hope you do if you're up near the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and support these fine people. Walk in, grab some bakery goods, take a loaf of bread home tonight for when you fix the spaghetti or something. He's got all the bread you need. If you'd like to do lunch, that's fine. The grill's open. The restaurant, the bakery is open 6:30 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. No, at this point, you can't dine inside Mona's, but hopefully that will be changing very soon. So it's monasdanishbakery.com. There you'll find their phone number, 579-1959. If you want to call ahead, say, I'd like my bakery goods ready when I come in or my lunch ready, that's not a problem. But please, let's support our local restaurants like Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be back with University of Arizona President Dr. Robert Robbins right after this.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. you can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
During the coronavirus crisis, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is open for one-on-one appointments only by calling 795-8226 to arrange a time with Moe or Corinne. No interruptions and no other customers. Moe will even arrange a drop-off at the store's front door and coordinate a virtual design session. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowland Dodge, 795-8226 and moesgallery.com. All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, University of Arizona Press, and Dr. Robert Robbins with us here on the Buckmaster Show. In the first segment, Dr. Robbins confirmed the decision has been made. There will be face-to-face classes at the University of Arizona in August. At this point, anyway, that is the decision that has been made. It will be revisited again in June. Also, right before the break, Dr. Robbins pointed out, at this point, no football at the University of Arizona. Is that correct, Dr. Robbins?
Well, I don't know, Bill. We're waiting to see what the NCAA does, what the Pac-12 does. I'm just, you know, as much as I want it, it just seems as though if we do play any football in the fall, it's going to be delayed because I've heard nothing. And this is, you know, we're headed to May 1st. My hope is we're going to get some clarity on this very soon. But it seems unlikely to me. I'd love to see it happen. But, you know, we're waiting every day to get some guidance.
All right. I had a question from one of our Facebook friends. What about the tenured professors at the University of Arizona? Are they also taking a pay cut? Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. Everybody at the university is included in this furlough program, which will be a reduction in pay.
You know, getting back to the sports question, we could spend an hour just talking about this. It looks, as you point out, it looks doubtful for college football, certainly starting up in August or September. Then you've got the basketball season,
right,
coming up in October. And you really have to wonder, Dr. Robbins, whether or not the NCAA may decide just 2020 and say, so this is a lost year. We're going to pick up everything in 2021. That really is a possibility, isn't it?
I think it is, Bill. What I've been hearing more of is that maybe doing something, combining both basketball and football for the spring. So January, February of 2021, and to try to play both of them. I mean, that will be... there'll be all kind of implications for television viewing and confusion. So I don't know. We just don't have any answers right now, and we're all isolated in our homes, and we're just eager to get on with life. But of course, we're most concerned about public health concerns, and I just want to say I just got a text that the former president of Stanford University, a friend of mine, Don Kennedy, who was also the editor of Science Magazine and the FDA commissioner, just died at the age of 88 from COVID. So this is affecting people that we all know. And so I think we've got to be careful about this. But we think by testing and trying to put these mitigation factors in place. We're hoping we can successfully bring students, faculty, and staff back to campus.
And let's talk a little bit about international students. 15% roughly are international students. That's off the board for the start of the school year in the fall of 2020. That's not even going to happen. Then you've got 40% of the University of Arizona students come from out of state, and of course there'll be questions. Parents may say, let's just keep you closer to home for a semester or a year. So what are we looking at? Give us what the enrollment was at the University of Arizona currently, and what you foresee the enrollment being in the fall of 2020.
Well, we think that there will be some of our international students will be able to attend because they're already here. We have about 8,000 or 9,000 students in our on-campus residential living quarters, and right now we only have about 600 of them. Most of them are students who don't have homes to go to, or are international students who couldn't get out of the country because they were concerned about getting back. So we will have some of those international students, but it'll be a marked reduction, probably 30 or 40% of those who stayed. We had about 13% that left and went home, and they probably won't come back for the fall. But this 40% accounts for over 50% of our revenue, our net tuition revenue. And that's why we had to take these draconian actions to limit pay to our faculty and staff. So we won't know right now. We think that there we'll get more in-state students, which is great. So we'd be projecting that there would be a reduction of about, I would say, I'm trying to do the math quickly, 40%, third of that. I think we're going to be down probably 7,000 or 8,000 students would be my guess. But again, these are only projections. My hope is that everything gets better, that the beautiful 100-degree weather that we're going to get this weekend is going to have a mitigating factor on the virus, and that people will, toward July, August, start thinking, yeah, I think I can go away to college, and they'll come back. And then we could relax this some of the furlough program that we have in place right now.
All right, let's summarize. I've got about 3.5 minutes. I have some media friends who are now tuning in. They would like to know, again, let's summarize what was said here. The decision has been made at this point to have face-to-face classes. As far as football and basketball, you could foresee a combined football and basketball season in the spring of 2021. Go ahead. Do I have that fairly accurate, Dr. Robbins?
Yeah, our intention is to bring everybody back to campus in the fall. Again, planning a hybrid approach, meaning some of our students will have to take some remote online classes that just can't get back to campus. But that would be subject to change. As I told you before, we'll take a quick look at that, about 2 months out, and try to give families and students a clear signal if we intend not to bring them back. But right now, yes, we want our students and faculty and staff to be able to come back. And then on the sports side, we're just waiting. I'm just speculating that is, we have no answers right now. I mean, we have to get players in training camp, and because if you can't expect them to come back to school in August, if you can't get them back and be in training camp, you'll have all kind of injuries, and it just wouldn't be safe. But given the current state of things, my personal reading of the tea leaves is it's going to be very difficult to start the schedule as it currently exists.
All right. These are very trying times. How are you handling this yourself? What are you doing? You still exercising?
Well, I, you know, Bill, I was doing about 2 or 3 dinners every night, and I know that our restaurants are hurting tremendously in Tucson. So I've been trying to, you know, get takeout. I'm trying to eat a little bit better and try to get in a little bit better shape and exercise some more, because I'm on Zoom calls and telephone calls from early in the morning to late at night every day. So I'm using it as kind of a recharge, a COVID-19 diet, and recharging myself, because I was flying all over the place, going out to dinner, traveling a lot, face-to-face meetings. And so this has given me, it's a little more intense, as you well know, mm-hmm. because you're on the electronics all day and all night.
Yep.
So it's stressful for everybody, and the uncertainty is what is so tough, and obviously the loss of revenue and loss of income for all of us is very, very stressful.
All right, Dr. Robbins, President of the University of Arizona, thank you very much. Stay well. We'll talk to you very soon. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Bill, you stay well, and I look forward to seeing you in person next time.
I hope so.
Okay. It's,
I get energy off people in studio, believe me, but not that I don't have energy otherwise, but it adds a little bit to it, doesn't it?
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover 2 of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. The Green Lady Hydro business over at Green Things at 3384 East River Road is doing very well during this time of coronavirus, when many people are saying, you know, I'm just going to grow my own vegetables. So the business now is catering to the small
home grower with ready-made hydro kits. They are easy to assemble. They have a full inventory of the various nutrients and the better-known products like Fox Farm, as well as all the different soils like Roots Organic and Ocean Forest. So check it out. Green Things, the hydro store, is right inside the main West Retail building on the south side. Their address, 3384 East River Road. The website is greenthingsaz.com or zocalovillage.com. Boy, speaking of growing your own, let's bring in Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture. And like our previous interview here with the U of A president, Dr. Robert Robbins, we like to have Dr. Silvertooth with me in studio, but that's not possible, of course. So everything is being done telephonically. Dr. Silvertooth, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Jeff Silvertooth, professor, has been with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences since 1987. He's currently the Associate Dean and Director for Extension and Economic Development, where he provides overall leadership in administrative and personnel management for the Arizona Cooperative Extension. He also serves as the Associate Director for the Arizona Experimental Station. Jeff, it's a very difficult time for all of us. I'm seated here alone in the studio. Luckily, I have my friend John Couch on the other side of the glass. It's a tough time, and I'm sure you're working at home, but so much of what you do, Jeff, you're out on the road visiting places throughout this big state. This has been a big change for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, a huge change in that respect. But, you know, just as I heard President Robbins speaking just before my session here today with you, that he acknowledged the fact that he's on the road and normally and out and around and dealing with all kinds of engaging with people across the nation and the state as well. And it's a huge adjustment. And I guess we spend more time on telephones like this and through email. My life is similar to what he described. It's just pretty intense electronically. But I do miss being out. I do miss the face-to-face. And I think people in our business are pretty well oriented to that to begin with. So it's a huge shift and adjustment for us. But I think we're managing.
You know, before we get on to the how this has impacted agriculture here in Arizona, my heart goes out to all the 4-H kids. They really work so hard, don't they, Jeff Silvertooth? And, of course, one of their big show-and-tell events is the Pima County Fair, and there's no fair this year. So it's a tough time for the kids, isn't it?
It is. You know, that's an interesting part. When this first all began to, you know, descend upon us with regard to the change in our work lives and personal lives in mid part of March, that's one of the first things we thought of with Extension, because we're just coming into the fair season and Pima County Fair was coming right up. So it was right here in our own backyard, direct front and center. But you know, what's happened, Bill, is the 4-H folks have done an incredible job of actually developing a sales and events that they're doing virtually. And actually, it's quite impressive what they've done. And it's also equally impressive the way the kids and the families, the people in the communities have responded, recognizing the circumstances, and have worked with our 4-H personnel to try to help facilitate those changes. And they're conducting the evaluations. They're conducting a lot of the sales in cooperation with the fair boards. They're doing these things virtually right now. And they did it very quickly. And that's what I've been most impressed with, was how fast they did it and the level of, would you say, cooperation from all parties, and both in the community and with our university personnel as well. Interesting story, but it's nothing like the real thing.
No, there isn't. So Jeff, they put their projects up online. Is that how it works?
Yeah, they have a virtual format that they're working with on that. And I haven't actually seen it myself. I've just had it described to me as these things evolve across the system. And it's a good example of how a lot of our personnel have responded. And frustrated at first, but then it's okay, here it is. Here's what we're dealing with. How do we begin to deliver our programs in 4-H with programs like this at the fair, with our family consumer health sciences programs, and even our ag programs? Some good innovation has taken place with regard to using our technologies today and making that accessible to people. And it's also clearly pointed out the what would you say, the discrepancies in our communities with regard to people that have and don't have access to electronic telecommunication capacities.
You know, so
excuse
me, Jeff.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, I mentioned one of our great sponsors, Green Things, and all the products they're doing over there. There are different soils and things. These are areas I don't really understand, but I know you do. And my point here, Jeff, is that a lot of people are going back to what was called in World War I and World War II as a victory garden. People are figuring,
right.
You know, I don't want to deal with having to fight in the grocery store with a bunch of people over produce. People are growing their own. This is a trend, Jeff Silvertooth, that I think will continue on, don't you?
I hope so. I hope it does. You know, there's several good things. I think there are some things that we can look at as positive from this, and I think it's important for us to try to do so. And that's one of them, Bill. We've seen the very same thing. You know, we always have an uptick this time of year with interest in publications and accessing people with expertise about gardening and, you know, landscaping and outdoor activities like this. And this year it's been quite marketed with regard to the acceleration in those kinds of inquiries. And, you know, there's several things that come from that, one of which is just get you outside. It's healthy being outside. It's good to go back and try to start figuring out, well, how do we grow produce? How would we grow these plants, these crops? And now another thing in mind is maybe we really need them. You know, in the past, a lot of people have been kind of sport gardeners. And people are starting to think, well, gosh, maybe it would be beneficial to us. And then the last thing, you know, you think about, too, is that it's good for the mind. I always believe in that. It's good for me. I miss not being out in the field right now as much. I've actually thought about doing more gardening, which I haven't done in the past because I'm always been working in the field, you know, but I miss that. And there's a therapeutic aspect to that as well. So I hope it catches and catches on. I hope it does folks some good, and I think it is right now.
So you're having to rely on the telephone and these sessions, these online sessions, talking to your people around the state. So give us the overview. How is this impacting your people that you're dealing with around the state, Jeff?
That's a great question, and it's been a point of interesting observation on my part. You know, I work directly with the folks that are the county extension directors, and we, as you know, we have extension offices associated with University of Arizona Cooperative Extension and in every county in the state, oftentimes multiple locations within a county, just as we do here in Pima County. And working with those directors and getting an update regularly on how they're responding and how they're dealing with these restrictions. They're working remotely. We've vacated our offices, but people are still available. And they found new ways to connect and develop, as we were describing before, and new ways to develop their programs. And they've actually done some things where they're going out to the field and working, still planning experiments, still getting things done, because you could do that with social distancing. And right now, I'd say, what are we, 6 weeks into this right now? The adaptation has been fast. It's been much better than I would have actually anticipated for any of us, just in terms of capacity. And now we're at a point where we're seeing maybe a new equilibrium develop. And that is, we're looking at this. How long is this going to go? This could go for a while. And it could be, you know, maybe another wave in the fall. And so I think our lives are going to change markedly as we move forward. I think the old normal is probably gone. The way things were for us on the 9th of March probably aren't coming back for quite a while. And I think people are beginning to settle in and see that and beginning to think, how can we incorporate some of these things long term?
And some of these counties that you deal with, let's take a very small county population-wise, Greenlee County. I think they've had only one or two cases, thank goodness, over there. So how this coronavirus is impacting places like that are very different than how it's impacting Maricopa and Pima counties.
Oh, excellent point. That's always what we see are the tremendous differences that we have from county to county across the state in terms of just everyday things every year. But this coronavirus business has really accentuated that. I tell you, a really good example is when you look in the northern part of the state, what's happening on the Navajo Reservation. And we have agents on the Navajo Reservation. We have three of them there. We have an agent, also one agent at Hopi, which is right in the middle of the Navajo Reservation. And then we have people in Apache, Navajo, Coconino counties. And the resources in all those counties are being heavily impacted. If you look at our maps in the state for our cases Flagstaff's one of the leading areas, and the hospitals in Flagstaff are probably being inundated per capita at a greater rate than about anywhere else in the state. So that's, you contrast that to the Greenlee case that you just described, and maybe a few other remote counties like La Paz. But yeah, it's tremendous differences, and that's what we always have to deal with. But this has really, really become apparent in this COVID-19 process as we can do an accounting. How are people doing in your areas, you know, and the problems are drastically different across the state.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, stick around with us. We will continue our telephonic interview with Jeff, who is our contributor on agriculture. He's Professor Silvertooth with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, where he has been since 1987. We're going to take a break right here in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. More with Dr. Silvertooth right after this.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Ama Douro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this midweek edition in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. If you're like me, you're dreaming of some kind of a road trip. I've got cabin fever. I know just about everybody does. And they're dreaming of when you can get in the car again and take off and do a road trip. Well, how about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? They'll be ready with open arms when you're ready again to travel. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the really nice places to stay in the area and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I was talking with a colleague here at the station. He was actually thinking, he and his family, of when things opening up and doing the road trip over to Silver City and visiting just north of Silver City, the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which Teddy Roosevelt dedicated back in, I think, 1906 or something. So when things open up, be a great road trip for everybody over to Silver City. With us on the live line, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture. He's a professor with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's been there since 1987. He's normally on the road. Speaking of road trips, this man puts on a lot of mileage on his vehicle. You ever figured out, Jeff, how many miles you probably put in a year on that beautiful truck of yours that I know you take a lot of pride in?
Well, that's why I like those trucks because I live in them.
I know.
And this, on the average in this job, I'm putting 25 to 30,000 miles on that truck a year. And I have had a previous one. And it was 2012. I've been in this job now for 8 years, and that's been pretty much the average, 25, 30,000 miles a year around the state. And before that, when I was making an honest living as an agronomist doing research and extension out in the state, out in the field, it was about the same. It was about 25,000 miles a year. But it's a regular deal, and that's the only way you get there right now in Arizona is to get out in the truck and vehicle and drive, you know.
Okay, there are a couple of big issues we need to talk about with agriculture, and one of them is labor, Jeff Silvertooth. What about that? How are some of these farmers and people in the industry going to get the labor they need right now with the president basically suspending immigration into the U.S., but that does not apply, I understand, to foreign farm workers. What can you tell us?
Well, there's several things happening there. You know, we depend, as you and I know, most of our listeners do as well, I'm sure, that in Arizona, along the southern states of the United States, really in the southwest, we depend pretty heavily on labor in a partnership with Mexico in that sense. So we talk about our agricultural industries out here. They're largely a partnership with Mexico because we need the people that come in, provide skilled labor and an abundance of skilled labor, and come in and help us with these cropping and animal production systems that we benefit from here in this state. So one of the things that's been happening, Bill, is people, actually a lot of the folks that are from Mexico, some of them have been, there's several different routes. Some folks continue to work, trying to continue to work, but they're concerned about this virus, and they're in situations sometimes where they're dealing with transportation, like in these buses for labor that pack people in there, and they don't like that. They're not comfortable with that. So some have quit. Some have gone back home to Mexico and said, I'm waiting for this. I'm going to ride this out, and I'm going to heed the warnings about social distancing and maybe get a job down here that pays less, but I could stay here with my family and avoid the problems that this brings on in the U.S. So some have actually dropped out. And then there are some places, too, where they've had increasing restrictions on their transportation or on their housing here in the U.S., and they've had to drop out. But it's a real concern for the growers across the state. And then if we have, you know, the prospects of things locking up on the border or these wage changes to take place, there, you know, people in the labor market are concerned, or in the production arenas are concerned about that as well. So labor's become a problem all of a sudden, even more so than usual. That's always an issue, huge issue for us.
What's the calendar show for the next harvest? Is that over in Yuma County, or was that during the winter season?
This all began just as the leafy green produce season was finishing up in Yuma and transferring to the Salinas Valley of California. And that's another issue there. A lot of folks have to travel and transport themselves all the way to Salinas, to San Joaquin and over to Salinas for these alternates, these warmer season produce cycles. And a lot of them aren't going up there. So that's a problem for those parts of the country in those states. But the next harvest for us, Bill, in answer to your question, is really coming up right now. It's just starting with melon harvest. And it'd be cantaloupe, honeydews, and then their watermelons will come later. And that's a labor-intensive operation. And it's not as extensive as the acreage with the leafy green vegetables, but that's coming up next for us. And then, of course, there's all the labor associated with the feedlots, dairies. The animal production industries in the state depended a lot on immigration and migrant labor. And, you know, then you have new laws being proposed, and they may put some wrinkles into this as well. So it's a precarious situation on the labor right now.
But are they getting the labor they need, the farmers, and are you hearing that they're going to have enough, like, people to get them, to pick the melons and get them to market?
It's scarce, and that's more competitive to get the labor. So when you already have a small labor force, and it thins just a little bit, people see the impact. So let's say you and I are farming, our melons are ready to go, and we've got to get labor out here. Well, there's a lot of other people in the neighborhood and the community have melons ready to go at the same time. And so you have a limited labor force, then it's more difficult. That's kind of goes back to some of these proposals have been made to lower the wages for farm workers, particularly the H-2A workers. And, you know, it doesn't make sense. If you have a crunch on labor supply, usually the price for to secure that labor goes up, not down. You know, so it's in that situation right there where if you want to try to secure them, one way to entice the labor would be to pay a little more. And that's what I would anticipate.
Jeff, one thing I haven't heard much about is the produce coming in from Mexico with the border. You know, I hear the border is closed. What can you tell us about that?
Well, even before all this hit, there's been problems with the border being slow and a loss of produce at the border. We still have a lot coming through, but a lot more produce has been lost at the border. And just to clarify for our listeners, a lot of the produce that comes in are not the leafy green vegetables, that we do grow those in the United States, but it's a lot of the fruit and vegetables that come in, the whole fruits and vegetables that come in from the South. Tomatoes, for example, the raspberries, blueberries, et cetera, a whole lot of other fruit types and vegetable types come through. And as they're delayed at the border for inspection, just in the past couple of years, they've been having increasing loss. So there's a financial loss to both the shippers, the packers, and as the growers as well. And this is just exacerbating that here right now. And particularly they close those borders off. So that's what we would see in the stores, Bill. We'd see a cutoff and we'd realize how much of this produce comes to us from south of the border.
And that's why we see sometimes with the grocery stores pick clean of fruits, a lot of fruits.
Yeah, I think so. You know, that's the irony there is that a lot of you hear about farmers plowing stuff up in the fields with good crops, like produce crops here, or leafy green vegetables primarily, and destroying those crops, dumping milk because their suppliers can't get it to the market. And it's kind of interesting. It exposes a part of our agricultural, our food production systems, where you have supply chain suppliers that if you and I were farming, we'd sell our produce to a distributor. Those distributors usually hooked up pretty well with, say, retail markets at the grocery store end. Well, if you're hooked up with those pretty well, you'd be still getting your produce into the market because the grocery store demand has gone up. Mm-hmm. But also, we find that a lot of our suppliers go directly to the processors that take things out to restaurants and to the food service industry. And with the food service industry closing up because of the quarantine associated with the COVID-19, that's dropped off. And so until a grower gets a new supply route hooked up and a new distributor, you're cut off from the market you originally had, which was the food service market. Oh. Now you want to get into the grocery store market, but that's a whole different supply chain they have to get over to.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. We'll catch up with you soon again. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Nice to visit with you.
Thank you, sir. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of my engineer, producer, and friend, John Couch, Dave Ramsey's next. I always enjoy hearing Dave give his financial advice to people. Sometimes they don't want to hear what he has to say. Have a great afternoon, everybody.